mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 353. We've been away for a while, but I'm Adam, and because none of the others are here, I don't have to bother with a quote, so I'm not going to, because Mary Lang's with me.
Hi!
Isn't it fun not having to do a quote?
Yeah. Oh, you want me to do a quote?
No. I haven't done one. Okay. We'll pick some quotes up later on. There were some quite...
There were some good ones.
In this particular story. Yes, this week we're going to be looking at Frontier in Space. There's a few members of the 20 Megabyte crew that couldn't be bothered to be on the show this week. Obviously didn't like the story very much, but apparently Andy Nunny sent in some feedback, so we'll see what happens with that. And, I should have said next week could have been the Planet of the Daleks, because it's been such a big gap. We could have easily watched Planet of the Daleks and this one in the time we've had in between episodes, but... I do feel that I suppose I'll have to leave a 2-week gap. Where are we? That would leave me. Oh, I'm doing a bridal show, but doesn't stop me from doing. Oh, on holiday then? I'm in 2 weeks' time. Oh no, it's not a major holiday. It's just a day off to do that bridal show. So essentially, we could still do it in 2 weeks. However, I'd like to do it next week, but I don't think it's going to happen because we can't actually communicate properly with the other people who might be on the show. Right. So Frontier in Space, Mary.
Ooh, hang on.
Your phone's ringing.
Yes.
Oh, I suppose I could play some lift music while I hope she's not being called in. Otherwise, it would be me on my own doing the show. That would be a novel thing, wouldn't it? Interesting T-shirt you have there, Mary.
Yes, it says Chicago TARDIS. Yes. Here, I'll stand up so it can show on Facebook.
Oops,
Chicago
careful what
TARDIS.
You're showing me there, Mary. I've got very, very innocent eyes.
Kind of filled the screen, didn't it?
Yes, it did, yes. And I've got a very big screen. Right then. We're going to do Frontier in Space. So that's going to move to episode 1, which starts with a title sequence. I hope we can move the volumes down. So this is the first. I mean, obviously we had Carnival of Monsters, in which the Doctor and Joe left Earth and did some stuff that on a place that looked like it was Earth. So it didn't really feel like a proper sort of interplanetary jaunt. This, however, is apart from Earth in the distant future, is pretty much all off planet and totally sci-fi. And so we begin with an Earth ship which is being hijacked or attacked by a mysterious ship which they think is the Draconians. At the same time, they nearly crash into the TARDIS, which materializes within the ship. And the Doctor and Joe set about. Set about doing what would become the typical doctor and assistant stroke companion, just poke around for a little while, then realise we should get back to the TARDIS, but we can't sort of scenario, which is really is Doctor Who tradition. I'm just skipping forward a bit. Oh yeah, so there's a funny noise that occurs, and when the chap from the spaceship comes around the corner, instead of seeing the Doctor, who is actually there, he sees a very bad rendition of a Draconian. Actually, looks really bad. It's not anybody in a proper costume. It's just a really poor Draconian mask. I don't quite understand why that was. Why they couldn't have actually got somebody in a Draconian costume instead of doing what they actually did with that scene. And Joe, at the same time, sees a very bad version of a Drashig. I mean, remember the Drashigs being pretty bad in Carnival Monsters.
It didn't look so bad.
This one didn't look as good as the ones in Carnival Monsters, I think, because...
looked pretty good.
Well, I think Carnival Monsters, they were actually filmed. They weren't on video, and I think the video picture sort of makes it look a bit not quite as good as it, or effective as it did in Carnival Monsters. But it obviously was effective to Joe.
What I understand, they got people in studio to just put the head masks of these various monsters on, and then just filmed them straight on to use for these, these little scare moments.
Mm. I think when just before the Doctor and Joe are brought into the bridge of the spaceship, there's a clock on the wall while the captain of the spaceship is talking to a Draconian. Or is it a Draconian? Because that was quite confusing.
It was very confusing for a while.
I would have said one of the questions would have been what would have been the time on the wall, on that clock on the wall. So just to let you know.
So.
Because that was quite prominent. And then we have a little photograph of Earth, probably taken from the moon, so to indicate that they were now on Earth. And the Draconian ambassador is having a bit of a barney with the Earth president, which is a woman. And are we allowed to have women in key roles in Doctor Who? Apparently the Doctor...
Oh, boy, in 1972, that's pretty forward-thinking.
Well, and Thatcher wasn't even leader of the Conservative Party at this point, so it was quite interesting that they had a woman in that part, and a bit of foresight, I would say. And the dog wants to come in. Typical 20 megabyte stuff. Come on in. I don't know why he wants to come in. He thinks he can hear me talking to someone. So so there's a lot of rowing going on between the president and the Draconian ambassador, and then Williams comes in, who's very, very, very deep voice,
yeah.
Very stiff upper lip. It doesn't look much like a soldier, and the costume he's got on, to be fair, but he acts like one for certain. He doesn't like the Draconians at all. But we don't find out exactly why until a bit later in the story.
Right. I mean, he comes across as such a baddie in these early episodes.
Yes. Yeah, he does, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
So the Doctor and Joe, meanwhile...
She's trying to undermine the president with everything she's trying to do.
Yeah. The Doctor and Joe, meanwhile, are locked in a brig, and the Doctor can't use his sonic screwdriver to get out. So that this, again, there's so many scenes in Doctor Who that the Doctor and Joe have been locked up together, the first of which the Doctor and Joe managed to escape because they were tied up and used some cleverness. On this occasion, they couldn't get out of it because it was all like futuristic locks and stuff. And another interesting scene, that the newscaster was an African actor who was actually in Fawlty Towers, played the Doctor in Fawlty Towers. And unfortunately, he was a very good actor, but his accent was very, very strong. For me, it was quite difficult to understand what he was actually saying. And also, I loved his costumes, purple sort of. I would have, if I was doing design for this particular story, I would still have had the newsreader in some sort of shirt and tie thing, but something a bit more elaborate. What I did like was the way they depicted the great big wall as the TV screen, even if it did have what was that program? The Flintstones. Remember their TV had a sort of that shape.
Oh, yeah.
A weird
yeah.
sort of... in
egg-shaped, almost.
Yeah, not quite as you would have the shape of a TV screen in the future. Mm-hmm. It was sort of a bit strange edges to it. But I did like the fact that they'd filled the whole wall up with it, because it won't be long before we do have a whole wall for a TV screen.
Getting there as our flat screens get bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and the definition gets higher and higher. Uh-huh. So Doctor turns his sonic screwdriver into an electromagnet thing, to allow them to escape and then get captured again. But this time they get recaptured by the Ogrons. But what does Joe see the Ogron as? I thought she saw it as something else. I can't remember. So, yeah, Joe gets taken away. Mm. Oh, no, she doesn't. Hang on, what happens there? That's a bit confusing. Oh, there's a big battle that goes on. The Doctor gets knocked out and everybody scarpers. And Joe and the Doctor are left. And I think... then they get arrested and taken to some penal... colony, or was that the next episode? Because at the end of episode one is where one of the many times in this story
that's episode three that they're sent to the penal colony.
Oh, right. Well, at the end of episode one, they there's a point in which they get sort of threatened with death, and this sort of happens a few times in the earlier part of the story, which the cliffhanger is them just about to get killed because they're being mistaken for either Draconians or humans.
Right.
And also, the other thing they seem to like to do is in this particular story is the ship docking sequence, because the Apollo-Soyuz mission was actually on around the time that this story was on. So they were talking about what they were going to do with the Apollo-Soyuz dock in 1973, with the two ships sort of meeting up nose to nose.
That was a big deal.
Yeah, so that's why they obviously had that in this story. I noticed the clock on the wall in the bridge on this ship now says 22:25 instead of 22:02 as it did earlier on. So I wonder if that's there specifically.
It's been a real time passing.
Yeah, maybe. So then, like I say, the Doctor and Joe get arrested again. I think they get split up. pretty soon. I keep on getting mistaken for either Draconians as humans. That seems to go on quite a lot.
Yeah.
And more rowing between the Draconian ambassador and the president, who's not overly convinced that it is the Draconians that are causing all this, but she has to go along with Williams. And then she tries to sort of execute her authority in some sort of military matter, which then gets overruled by Williams, because in this matter I take full full command, I suppose, which would never happen.
Doesn't the president hold on to Joe, keep her on Earth while they send him to the penal colony?
That may be the case. I should know this. I watched it last week.
I think she takes pity on Joe, you know.
Yeah, I watched this last week, so there are little bits and bobs.
She's a misguided girl.
I'm a really good podcaster. There's bits and bobs I've sort of forgotten. But no, that's right. So they get sort of, fetch them to see me. I want to speak to them, isn't it? That was a thing. And then they get ambushed in an attack that's supposed to be by the Draconians or something like that. And in that, as they get split up, Joe gets left behind and the Doctor gets sort of captured by the Draconians, has a fight with them, runs off, and then gets put in a cell with Joe again. There's lots of capture and recapture, and then a few more battles. A bit sort of reminiscent of the old Havoc days, which would have been a couple of years earlier than this.
And if you notice that whenever Joe and the Doctor are separated, it seems like they don't worry that much about each other. And when they meet up again, it's like, oh, great, you're here. But it's not like, oh my God, this is, I was so worried about you.
Yeah, I know.
It's kind of like it's old hat now that they get separated and locked up and then joined back together.
Yeah. Right, so episode 3 is, it starts with the president getting a bit of a pampering session from a couple of attractive birds. I would have thought that she'd probably actually have a couple of attractive blokes doing it, to be fair, but there you go. BBC gay agenda, maybe, I don't know.
A little too suggestive.
Yeah. I do love the sets in this. The president's set, so beautiful, but like I say, the big TV screen on the wall and a tiny little round monitor sort of intercom that she's got on, and all the alleged futuristic stuff. But it's really, really pretty, her set. And I also love the scene where the Doctor gets the mind probe. Maximum power. You shouldn't really do that, should you? And of course,
which is supposed to destroy anybody's mind, but instead the Doctor destroys the machine.
Yeah, it's only supposed to destroy the mind if they're not telling the truth.
I think
that's what he was saying. Because, of course, he was being asked questions. He was just telling the truth. And, of course, Williams would not have it. And this is a point in which the Doctor gets taken to the penal colony.
Mm-hmm.
Colony. We meet some temporary characters, which are all quite good characters. We're obviously in for a couple of episodes and quite distinctive characters. And also one of them is...
That professor that he meets at the penal colony never looks at anyone he's talking to.
Weird, isn't it? Yeah, I noticed that.
Crazy. He's always looking down. He just kind of turns towards people he's talking to. For a while, I thought maybe he was blind and he couldn't look at them.
No, that's a good point. No, he was... He went on to play... He was in Sharda. He was the professor. Remember in Sharda, the one that had the TARDIS?
Yes.
He was him in that, but obviously nobody got
that's
to see that
he
one.
He looks familiar.
And Keeper of Traken, he was the Keeper before the Keeper dies. Oh, I'm a bit of a spoiler there, but he was the first Keeper of Traken that we see in the Keeper of Traken. So he's been a Doctor a couple of times. But he does sort of a little bit look at John Pertwee.
Are you sure? Because it's a bit like he's
looking through him.
The scenes to see, is it just me or is it him? But he doesn't really look at him.
Yeah, a couple of times, not properly, not like you would do if you engage in conversation with somebody, to be fair.
Yeah.
I'm just going to get my...
Even when they're together alone, he doesn't look at him.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to multitask here, which is being a bloke, not particularly... Right then, we've got some things coming through on the 20 megabyte feed. Laurie Nix, are you playing the drinking game? Every time the Doctor or Joe get tossed in the clink, you do a shot. Hey?
That's a good idea.
I've got a cup of tea, which is probably a little bit on the hot side. Did you say you've got to add some milk to your tea, by the way, Mary?
I do add milk to my tea.
I thought you said I had to remind you to do that.
No.
No, okay. Laurie Nick says, hi, you lovely peoples. I don't know if I'm really reading these in reverse order. Alan T. Butcher, never mind the TARDIS windows, the Drashigs were the wrong size.
Oh,
I suppose,
okay.
That's one point. They did look a bit small. And Ashley Hughes says, hello. Right. Moving back to the story, yeah. The penal colony thing, which I thought was fascinating, the fact that there was men and women in this sort of facility. Also, again, the sets were great. It did look like a sort of spaceship.
Oh, yeah, the sets were wonderful.
I don't know why they were all sort of wearing hospital gowns, which was quite interesting.
They do. They all look like they're going to surgery.
Yeah, and then about halfway through the episode, out of the blue, the Master appears.
I know. But, you know, there's been so much, I don't know, just chit-chat, so much chatter going on. When the Master arrives, I even made the note, am I actually glad to see the Master? Mm. And I am. Because now I know things are going to be more on a predictable scale.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things. When I first watched this story, the Master turns up and, oh, that's why. Mm-hmm. That's why there was weird stuff going on. Imagine you're watching this, this would have been like the third week of the story. You'd probably be starting to think, well, how's this going to pan out? And then, of course, the Master turns up and it makes it a little bit more interesting. Also, I thought it was quite interesting that the people in the penal planet or the moon colony, whatever it is, had to drink out of baby drinking cups.
Did you notice that too? Yeah.
And then the Master pays Joe a visit, and there's a lovely little conversation between him and Joe. And I think just at one point he says to Joe, "You're going to come with me. We're going to rescue the Doctor." Well, you are, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then does he not try the "You will obey me" thing, or is that later on in the story? But either way, yeah, he does. He doesn't do the "You will obey me" bit at that point.
Yeah, that's later on. That's later on.
Yeah, I think episode 6, I think it was.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she does go with him, and the Doctor gets embroiled in an escape plot. But unfortunately, the bloke that helps them into the room where they're getting into their space costumes is actually trying to sort of frame them in a way to get them killed. And all the air's pumped out of the little room they go into, and the end of episode 3. But they get rescued.
Well, because as soon as you see the gloved hand come in and reverse that dial, you know, oh, that's the Master.
Yeah. Yeah, they get rescued. And then they sort of are taken in to see the Governor, who the Master then sort of... He's sort of making them look like they're villains, but he'll take them away with him. Doesn't want to say, I don't know, they're completely innocent, but they are villains, and I'm of a higher command, so I'll take them with me, thank you very much. And so he takes them away, and they get banged up again. In a sort of cell, and then the Master sort of just has them on CCTV. I'm surprised he didn't watch the clangers actually when he was sat at the helm of this spaceship.
Like the last time.
Yeah, and so the Doctor and Joe devise a plot in which they just can have a conversation while the Doctor cuts through a metal bar. What did he use to cut through the metal bar with?
It just looked like a wire.
Yeah.
Well, what great acting on Katie Manning's part to talk on and on and on like that.
Obviously, it was scripted, but she... I think all of that was scripted.
That's an awful lot of talking.
Yeah. You would expect... Unless it was improvised. No, I haven't... Kirby would know.
Yeah,
was it
Kirby
improvised?
He knows it all.
Billy Kirkbright says... 2:31 a.m. I'm off to bed. Oh, cheers, Billy. Philip W. Cerner, who was going to come and join us, but never did. On the, he says, hello from South Bend Inn. What does that mean? South Bend, Indianapolis? South Bend?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it's Indiana. South Bend, Indiana.
And the most exciting thing that he says is audio feedback incoming.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
let's hope he's sending it.
It's nice getting celebrities send stuff into the show. Right, back to Doctor Who. So the Master, meanwhile, like, he's reading a book, which again would have been a quiz question, which is an H.G. Wells book called The War of the Worlds, which is essentially what this is based on to a certain degree in very loose terms. The Doctor does escape, but like you said, Katie Manning, aka Joe, devises this talking to herself thing as if she's talking to the doctor. And again, another thing I love about these sets is the doors. The silver doors look really, really thick and really, really do look chunky and metallic. I'm sure they're actually made out of balsa wood, but they actually did a great job with those doors.
You know, the great sets. Yeah,
when the doctor goes outside, it's such a thick door, and it really does make it believable. His suit is not that good, but I'll forgive that.
Not so great, but the thing that bothered me was that he goes out that door, and of course he's climbing around, but he left the door hanging open. Mm. The last shot we see of him going up the side of the rocket is the door standing wide open.
Yeah, but there was another bit later on that bothered me, or would have bothered somebody, as when the airlock was sort of, all the air was rushing out and they were able to actually pull the door shut. That would never been impossible to do that.
The doctor, just with a lot of rushing, he just leans out and pulls the door shut,
He did use, obviously, he was floating away from the spaceship when the master decided to change course. So he did use his air to sort of propel himself back towards the spaceship, which was feasible.
And the ship is going warp speed.
Is it going warp speed? I didn't even know it was going warp speed. I didn't pick up on that. But, if he'd gone with it warp speed, he would just got ripped to shreds, and essentially.
That's right.
At least his fingers would have come off, but never mind. Okay, it's a science fiction fantasy TV show. We use the word fantasy in its broadest possible terms. Anyway, so the Doctor, meanwhile, manages to get back in the spaceship. The Master realises something's untoward, and what's happening there? Quite a lot going on. I think he manages to get a message, doesn't he, to... excuse me. Draconians, because the Draconians turn up and arrest all of them and take them back to Draconia. But again, they're all locked up. And the Master takes a little homing device with him to bed. Pretty sure somebody would have spotted that, but never mind.
Really? Yeah. They would not have searched him for anything.
No. Right, so episode 5. And they land on the Draconian planet, or planet Draconius, or whatever it's called, and we have this scene in which, because the king is, can't remember his name, but it was the actor that will play the what did he play now? I can't remember his blooming name, but he was in Spearhead from Space. He played the manager of the factory, I think, and he will be in Terror of the Autons, playing the sort of Scottish bloke who runs the castle that is also a Zygon. Oh. Got a very distinctive voice. But these were John Pertwee's favourite Doctor Who monsters, by the way, the Draconians, just to point out that.
The Draconians?
Yeah, these were John Pertwee's absolute favourite.
They're so well conceived of and made.
And
we
wonder wonderful. Why they haven't returned.
We don't see the Draconians after Pertwee, do we?
Nope. No, I think the Big Finish may include them somewhere along the line, but not in Doctor Who, no, or TV Doctor Who at least. So, yeah, we have to go through these sort of regal rubbish. What you're not allowed to say in front of the king, or women aren't allowed to speak in front of the king, or how can you address the king in this matter? Only a noble of Draconia can, I'm a noble.
Of course. Yeah. We knew that was coming.
What was slightly disappointing is he obviously said he's visited many years ago. It was probably when he was the first doctor, but he doesn't mention, he could have said, I came along here with my granddaughter or something like that, but he doesn't in this story, but he will do that in the next story. Because he has to refer to when he previously visited Skaro, because obviously we know Planet of the Daleks is going to be Skaro-based. There's no spoilers there, but it was obviously going to be. But anyway, so it's a similar sort of situation on the Draconian planet. It's the Draconian king is basically mirroring what the Earth president was thinking, and. Mm-hmm. That he had his son that was mirroring what Williams was doing.
Yeah.
So the Doctor basically had to go through the same rigmarole. But they decide nevertheless to go to Earth on a sort of a mission of peace, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Somebody fires a missile.
Convinced by the Doctor.
Yeah. And they do.
You notice how the insides of these ships that they keep traveling in all look the same? I'm just wondering if there's some kind of, cookie cutter rocket ship that was made at that time.
I would expect
you're so. Earth or Draconian, you have the same.
Probably made style. By Ford. Right, so they end up back on Earth, and then there's a lovely discussion between Williams and the Prince, I suppose you call him, in which the Prince explains that Williams made a catastrophic error of judgment, and Williams immediately accepts this and changes his attitude towards Draconians and decides to help them. So Joe is meanwhile sort of kidnapped by the Ogrons and the Master, and that's the point in which he tries to do "You will obey me," and she gets her lines a bit mixed up when she's talking with a gobbledygook. She cocks up some of the nursery
Mary's
rhymes.
Little Lamb and Seesaw, Margie Draw, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lovely scene between the two. The Master obviously has a little bit of respect for Joe, but nevertheless he uses his machine to show her something scary, but we don't see what it is until the end, until the beginning, I think, of episode 6. I think it's now time for another sip of tea. Mary's disappeared. Mary's back again.
I'm back. I'm just looking.
Some cats out. Yes. What did she? Oh yeah. So he shows Joe, which is himself, but she sees Drashig and a. Oh God! What are they? Some monsters, shall we say? Sea devil.
Yeah, there's one I didn't recognize, but there is the one from Fury from the Deep.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, well, there is. She sees three.
Yeah.
One is a Drashig. Then there's one in the middle that I didn't recognize.
Is that the one from Fury from the Deep?
No, the third one is.
Oh, the third one is the sea devil.
Yeah. The sea devil. Thank
yeah,
you.
I don't know what the middle one was. I'm sure Kirby would know. But it doesn't work on Joe, and the Master sort of realizes that she's more a match, so he just sort of locks her up again. And so the Doctor and Williams head towards where the Master and Joe and that are, and I think they eventually land on the planet, which is where the Master takes Joe down to the surface just so they can have the big meeting with the Ogrons, and then the Daleks turn up, and it's very strange, that battle.
Well, there's all that pursuit by the Master, going after the ship that the Doctor and the Draconians are on.
Yeah,
and then there's that electrical connection. He's got to go outside the ship again to fix it.
Yeah, but nevertheless, they do this thing, and the Daleks turn up, and of course the Master's all there with his arms folded, all quite sort of smug. The Earth people and the Draconians are locked up in a cell, and a battle ensues, and the Doctor gets shot. And the weird thing about it is
it's not clear, though, whether he's the one that gets shot, because it looks like he just has a really bad bruise on his head.
Yeah, the Master goes to shoot the Doctor, but his arm gets knocked up, so instead of shooting him in the chest, he shoots him, it just catches the top of his head. And everybody legs it, and everybody disappears, leaving the Doctor and Joe in the TARDIS. The Doctor says to Joe, "Oh, get me into the TARDIS." I think he does his sort of arm, send a message to the Time Lords, blah, blah, blah. But it was a really weird ending to the actual story itself.
Yeah.
It was a...
very strange.
How was that an end to the story, or was this whole thing just a prelude to the planet of the Daleks? I don't know, but yeah, so that was essentially it. He did his message to the Time Lords, and that was the end of the episode. So what I'm going to say about the story was really, really enjoyable. I think it was gripping, the acting was good, the sets were fantastic, but most stories have an end, and this didn't really have a proper end. That's the only thing I would say is a fault with it. It was enjoyable, but I think when you watch episode 6, if you sort of take away the joy of seeing Roger Delgado's last ever appearance in Doctor Who, and all this sort of big sort of RTD sort of bring the Daleks and the Master, everybody together all in one episode sort of phantasmagoria stuff, there wasn't an end to the story that you've been watching for 6 weeks. Yes, they did bring in a rather sort of, it's the Daleks. No, at the end of the episode, something interesting is going to happen the following week, but it didn't really explain or finish what happened to all the characters that just miraculously disappeared a couple of scenes earlier. So that's the only fault I have with it. Other than that, I really, really enjoyed it. What do you think, Mary?
Well, if you heard my feedback last week, how much I loved Carnival of Monsters.
That would have surprised people.
I love this one even more. I am so excited about this particular season of Pertwee. I haven't seen this season other than the Three Doctors at the beginning. I've seen that before, and the Green Death at the end of this season. And neither one of them really did much for me. But oh my gosh, these stories in the middle are just amazing. The production values are so good. The sets are wonderful. The monsters are so well done. And the acting is really good. And Joe, I've really enjoyed Joe as she gets more confident, more able to stand up for herself. Something in Doctor Who that I've never really noticed before is character development. And they're really doing that just this season with Joe. So it's too bad she's going to leave at the end of this season.
I think they've been doing it over her whole time in the show. There's been a gradual moving forward of Joe as a character, because I remember listening, because I had to listen back to recent episodes of the show, and when we started the second series of John Pertwee, you were really scathing of Katie Manning and Joe as a character, and you were saying, I think I'm going to hate this character. And we were saying, oh, no, stay with her, she will become one of the best companions ever, and you could not see that happening
from the first few episodes. Because so I never saw this season.
We've been sort of proven to be correct on that one, but carry on, sorry.
Yes, all right. You're correct. Yeah. You knew it. You could predict this. And something that I was reading, Robert Sherman wrote about this particular story, saying that what we really need to do is to take it as a whole 16-week development, because he says Carnival of Monsters really sets this one up. And then this has the 6 episodes, and the reason that it doesn't really end very satisfactorily is because they could not figure out how to end it, because this is supposed to segue into the next 6 episodes. That this is really like a 12-part story. And apparently they had to redo the end of this one several times, and nobody's ever been happy with how it ended, because it's just kind of chaotic. And the Master disappearing like he does is kind of sad, because we're never going to see him again. But I loved all of this. And yes, there's a lot of niggly little things that don't make sense. We could see the Doctor's Kirby wires, when he's outside the ship and all that.
That's understandable.
The ending is very unsatisfying, but then we know why, because nobody was happy. They reworked it several times, according to Sherman. So they just kind of gave up and let it be what it is, and they tacked on that Doctor in the TARDIS, which they did not originally plan to have there, to take him on to the next part of this 12-part story. So I'm very impressed. I love this season 10, and I love what's been happening with Joe. So there you have it.
Yeah, like you say, Alan T. Butcher says it was not an end, because the whole 12 episodes are one story, a remake of the Dalek Master Plan. So that's understandable. But it still feels like 2 separate stories, because there was no Draconians in the rest of the next 6 episodes. It was all I still think this forget about the Three Doctors and Carnival of the Monsters, this story is the beginning of the golden age of Doctor Who, or classic Doctor Who.
I would include the Carnival of Monsters.
I know you would, but I still think Carnival of Monsters is a bit sort of comedy, sort of. I loved it, but I still think it's a bit. But from this time onwards, we obviously come to the end of the Pertwee era. We've got Barry Letts firing on all cylinders, and then we change over to another one of the best producers the show's ever had, and I just think from here on for the next 4 or 5 years, it's Doctor Who, classic Doctor Who at its best. But this was the beginning of it, and it really is lovely to see the Third Doctor, being so brilliant, because he was my first Doctor that I can remember seeing. Obviously, I did watch Walter Houghton, but he was the Doctor when I was very, very young, and Joe was the companion, and that's the partnership I remember so well. And it's lovely seeing them two together, and like you say, seeing Jo being a strong woman, and she's really grown up. She has been with the Doctor for a while. You feel that when she was first brought in, she was more of a teenager, a bit giggly, mm-hmm. a bit dizzy, and now she's growing into a woman. And this will carry on, obviously, because she will leave. It's not all characters leave, but the reasons why she leave will become apparent at the end of this series, and it's totally makes sense for Jo as her character development from teenager to woman. And obviously being with the Doctor and experiencing what she has done, even the fact she spent most of that time on Earth, she would have become the way she is, a strong character. And I just love that scene she had with the Master, where she basically...
Oh, yeah.
The Master, he could have just killed her, but he, said, mm-hmm. he more or less said, well, fair enough, you know, I'll just keep here.
You kind of got the feeling that one of his goals, along with defeating the Doctor... is to dominate Jo. That's something he was looking forward to doing, and when he couldn't do it, that was a big frustration.
One
little thing that I got a kick out of was the voice for the Daleks this time around. It was very different. It sounded more like someone talking into a fan than using a real voice
modulator. Probably was.
It just had that sound.
Yeah. No, I think you're probably right. It probably was... they're trying all different ways to do something with the voice.
Character development happening with the first or second Doctors. Their companions did get a little bit more trusting of the Doctor to some degree, but I don't remember there being any real growth in the characters themselves.
I think there was a lot of growth with Jo. With Sarah Jane, there was a little bit of growth at the beginning, but she was very consistent. Her character was very consistent all the way through her time in the original series. Mm-hmm. And there were certain bits of character development with future companions. Tegan, for one.
I'm talking about the earlier doctors.
Yeah, I know. I'm just thinking about where some companions were very consistent and stayed more or less the same all the way through. There were some companions that you saw visible character development. And bearing in mind that Sarah Jane was a character that was with the Doctor for the same length of time, essentially, as Jo was.
Well, I've seen all of her stories, but from what I have seen, I would agree with you,
There was a bit of a slight change of direction for Sarah Jane when Tom Baker came in, but she was still very much the same as she was when she was with John Pertwee, apart from the first couple of stories. But we'll see that not too far into the future. Right, I was going to look into some feedback, and we don't have to make the stupid noise this week. Yay! guess what? We've got something from Alan T. Butcher, which I'm going to send over to you. But in the meantime, while you digest a little bit of it, I'm going to have a look on the feed that Kirby very kindly posted, considering he's not here. He was still able to request feedback, which I thought was very nice of him. Quite a nice chap, really, isn't he? Let's have a look. I'm just... try to see if I can send this over to you. This is really good podcasting, this. But it did arrive while I was recording, so we did make it rather awkward. Right, I'm sending this to you via the medium of Facebook Messenger.
Oh, okay.
So it is now with you. And now I'm going to have a look at Kirby's request. Let's see if anybody... I've just looked at the wrong page. Definitely won't be on there. Right, okay. Nobody has. It says, we'll be recording the podcast, blah, 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 and did a request for it, and nobody answered it at all. Got a couple of likes off Jason Chuang and Emily Blackall, but nobody did reply. So that rather leads to, while you're digesting that, we've got some bits and bobs. We'll start with this bit and bob here.
Well, good afternoon, 20 megabytes, it's Andy Nelly here. Hopefully this is going to work, so I'm trying to record on my MP3 player. My headphones seem to have packed up. Sorry, it won't be this Sunday. I'll probably be just driving back from hopefully having watched the Harlequins Beauty of the Wasp, so unlikely. Anyway, given my performance last week, I think probably better if I wasn't on it. Anyway, Frontier in Space. Well, this is a typical Pertwee six-parter in that, really, why was it six-parter? It should have only been four parts, because there's actually a very good four-part story trying to come out. It actually is quite tightly written. It's just the bits in between the tightly written bits are just flab. I mean, if I look at my notes, if I do a quick flick through, there's episode four sort of seemed to not actually happen. There didn't seem to be very much going on. There was a video, we wanted to be all running through corridors. However, the bits were good. I thought the mask was really very well used. Clearly, nobody knew who he was, given the fact he's obviously the future and units aren't there. So when he turned up claiming to be a commissioner, I think he worked very, very well. I think the way he and the Doctor interacted is excellent. I think it just shows that it's like a Holmes-Moriarty relationship, love-hate. You know, are they brothers? They clearly were friends. There's something a bit more going on about that. The one thing I do like about this Master, he's very urbane and polite. You know, given the point, you know, he's going to kill the Doctor and Joe eventually, or so he believes, yet he actually takes the trouble to other in his spaceship to say, you better tuck yourself in, hold on tight, because it's going to get a bit rough. He didn't have to do that. I remember writing an article he did many, many years ago saying that the Master was one of the people who would help your granny across the road. He'd probably shrink her first to make it easier, but the point is he would actually do something like that. Now, I think the military campaign between the Draconians and Earth, obviously, I think it's a Cold War allegory. I'm willing to bet Alan T. Butcher will use that word somewhere, given his predilection for using extremely long words and confusing poor Debbie. However, it's something that was relevant at the time, in 1973, still going on, coming to the end of it, but I can remember sort of being vaguely aware of it. I'd have been 8 at the time. Adam, you're in obviously a similar age, you may have known that. Kirby, I think you're slightly older, so you can comment on this as well. But I think it just shows the total mistrust, so based really on misinformation from the powers that be. I mean, that's what it's all about. But when General Williams has realised what he's done wrong, I think, you know, the way he tries to make amends is interesting. You know, really would, you know, a military campaigner of his ilk really turn so quickly? Mm. That's the bit that didn't quite work with me. Interesting to have a female president as well, because how many at that time, how many countries had female leaders? You know, we are 6 years short of Margaret Thatcher, at which point Alan T. Butcher probably starts spitting. But to have a woman leader would have been a rarity in those days, obviously not so much now. I'm going to put a nice massage quote in there, but hey ho, that's probably better. Yes. But all in all, I thought it was a very, very good story. I like the ending when the Daleks, complete surprise, which I think really does work and takes you through into the next story. Shame, well, I suppose you had to call it Planet of the Daleks because you knew the Daleks were coming. And it's not many times you end a whole story on a cliffhanger. And as people have said, this really does replicate the Dalek Master Plan, being it's a 12-parter. Even the Doctor Who Peter Hayden celebration book says, you know, people didn't see the woods of the tree, didn't realise effectively this was just one long story. I think, you know, it's the only time I've ever done something like that. I don't count Trial of the Time Lord as one story, because that was just bits cobbled on when events overtook the BBC. But all in all, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Wish it had been slightly shorter. And all being well, I will be talking to you live certainly next week. Until then, be seeing you.
That's Andy Nunny.
Oh, and the English translation will follow.
Yes. I probably had a couple of wanes before doing that particular bit of feedback. Yeah, that was a bit weird, wasn't it? I sort of understood what he was saying. He said that it was should have been a four.
It.
Yeah, he sort of liked it, but he said it should have been a four-parter, essentially.
Says that. Yeah. I don't agree on this.
I don't agree on this occasion. I think I quite enjoyed it being a six-parter. I'm assured by our celebrity person, which was Mr. Philip. Philip W. Cerner. It said audio feedback incoming. I don't know if that means he's sending it or he sent it, but I haven't had anything as yet.
Nothing's up.
As soon as I said that, it turned up.
Hello, 20 Megabiters. It's Dr. Phil, and I'd hoped to be able to join you guys today, but unfortunately, I'm in South Bend, Indiana, performing Stabat Mater by Franz Joseph Haydn.
Fair enough.
So I'm sorry I'm not there, but anyway, I wanted to send in some thoughts on favorite story of the 10th season of Doctor Who, Frontier in Space. A lot of people, when buying the Dalek War box set, buy it for Planet of the Daleks. You know what? I'm sorry. I can't stand Planet of the Daleks. I love Malcolm Hulk's Frontier in Space. You've got people like the general who are undermining all possibilities for peaceful resolution between Earth and Draconians. The Master's role is actually quite enjoyable and not the usual, okay, it's the Master again this season, like we've had in the past. And I think it's actually a very good appearance for him, although it's very unfortunate it's his last appearance as the Master. I think Joe is very good in this. There's some great moments. I love the cliffhanger ending. It gets, you know, not very much Pertwee era Doctor Who puts a tear in my eye, but the end of Frontier in Space does. Okay, there are some problems with it. The monster on the Ogron's home planet is a little problematic. And the Ogrons being kind of a double bluff of, oh, it's the Ogrons, must be the Daleks. Oh, it's the Master. Oh, the Master's working for the Daleks. We should know from the beginning. We didn't know from the beginning. Ah! it's a quite nice kind of turn and twist around. I love the Draconians kind of being the Klingons of the Doctor Who universe, that they kind of, I think, our good script editor, I'm suddenly forgetting his name, Terrence Dix describes them as samurai in space, and I love John Woodnut's performance as the Emperor of the Draconians.
Oh, John Woodnut.
Even though I love him a lot more in Terror of the Zygons later, but, you know, that'll be enjoyable when we get to Zygons. But, yeah, for some reason, after Series 10, I don't feel the chemistry feels quite right again, and while I do love Sarah Jane Smith in Series 11, I think she gels, even though I think the best features of her character are in her first series. Sorry, I didn't mean to say open the series season debate in her first series, but I think that she blossoms as a kind of fully formed human being in during the Tom Baker era. So I think this is kind of, well, I know at the end of the next story it sets up her departure in the Green Death, but I really love Jo in this story. She's very resourceful, intelligent, creative, and hopefully you guys might agree with me on that.
We do.
But I hope that you guys have been enjoying your journey through Doctor Who. I'm excited as you guys head towards my childhood favorite era of the show, but my opinions on Who have changed a great deal over the years, and my initial entry into Doctor Who was actually Attack of the Cybermen, because I'd been introduced to this show about a crazy guy in a scarf, and on PBS, those weren't the episodes showing, at least they weren't in the rotation. They tended to go all the way until the current story, the most current series, and then went back to the beginning, to the Hartnell era. So I remember reading the program guide of all the synopses, and so for me, Television Baker was always my favorite growing up. Big Finish, it's Colin Baker. And Television, I think for me it's Capaldi, even though I thought Matt Smith was my favorite. But, you know, I guess it always changes depending on your frame of mind and perspective as times and stories change. So, anyway, don't mean to be rambly. Lots of love to the 20 Megabyte podcast, and I will hope that I'll have some time in the next during the fall to join you guys once or twice as we get into the early Bakers. So anyway, take care. Bye-bye.
Dr. Phil.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Phil.
Nice to hear from him.
His mentioning our journey, I think I would never have appreciated Jo like I do if we had not been watching her over the course of the journey.
Yeah.
When you dive in and then you go to another story somewhere else, and you don't get that sense of growth.
No, but which I was going to say, having listened back to earlier episodes of this show, you know, people's opinions were quite interesting earlier on in the Pertwee era anyway, but we have seen a gradual improvement in this era. And in some ways, it's quite nice that the Brigadier is not in every story now. It's nice to see him pop up from time to time, but it was getting a bit stale. Constantly having unit stories.
Well, the Master was getting a bit stale too, so it was nice to have a break from him.
And this is really apart from
Colony. And
it was good
to see him again, you know, pop up.
But apart from Colony in Space, this is the first and only real sort of venture, extraterrestrial venture for the Master, or the Roger de Gardas Master. But yeah, it's good. Right. Oh dear, it didn't work.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast, this is Ian Kirk. Frontier in Space by Malcolm Hawke. I did not enjoy this story much.
What?
Capture, escape. Lots of journeys through space. The Doctor tries to escape on the moon, and is locked in an airlock with Bernie Sanders. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. Yeah, I don't think he liked it very much.
Okay. Well, it was so quiet, I couldn't understand.
Yeah, it was quite muffled for some reason. Maybe he was sat on his recording device.
Yeah.
But yes. So you have some words.
Some words. Oh my gosh, I think this may be his longest entry.
Good luck.
I'm All right, sit you're back. Ready for Alan
I'm
T.
Sit back.
Butcher?
With my Slytherin cushion and listen to this.
Okay. Settle back my apologies to Alan. Although I'm probably able to read all the words, I'm not able
pronunciation
to understand
issue.
What they mean. So, okay, starts out with three-eared draconians, a left ear, a right ear, and a final front ear in space. Dear 20 megabiters, Frontier in space is, of course, a closely studied conjecture on diplomatic machinations and the potential role of third-party intervention in the employment of disruptive exposure of information and propagation of fake news. By playing upon their respective cultural weaknesses and prejudices, two very distinct and in some ways incompatible, but not necessarily antagonistic, political entities are manipulated to a point of conflagration by an interlocutor shrouded behind several levels of agency in order to expedite a devastating scenario for the confronting parties and an opportunity for the exogenous force to take advantage. The eponymous galactic meniscus is not being violated by either side, but is itself the problem by its very existence, provocative as it is to mistrust and misapprehension. The solution presented is, of course, openness, honesty, and an understanding acceptance of differences. It is perhaps more applicable now than at any time since its inception. It should be noted, however, that this is a very dystopian future in which an autocratic monarchy, which appears to have little respect for your average draconian on the Clapham omnibus, is ranged against an authoritarian and militaristic, perhaps pseudo-democratic Republican Imperium, which transports political prisoners to a far-flung shore. In this way, the thought experiment here proposes the British and Chinese empires as they might have clashed had their most aggressively expansionist phases intersected. We also learned that the chap that initially ran the plastics factory for the Nestine consciousness worked his way up to be the Emperor of Draconia after that nasty business of being impersonated by a Zygon. And that Omega and the K-1 robot both enjoyed pretending to be Ogrons and infuriating the master by having the best lines when in his company. All in all, Frontier in Space is another huge story from the credible Hulk that was later fused with Tolkienian elements to create Babylon 5. Miss Grant has developed to a level of resourcefulness and independence that perhaps forebodes her oncoming departure. This is a credit to the hexahedonal, format so favored by the Let's Dix gestalt. Finally, we must also mark the passing of the one true master with another flawless performance, but sadly an all too Dodo-esque disappearance into the sunset. Next up, Doctor Who and the Dalek / Master Plan Redux, Part 2. Or, I bury Daleks now. Daleks are cool. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you, Alan.
Ooh, Alan, I tell you, I think I've earned Debbie reading the next five.
Yes. Yeah, I'll just say thanks for the people who've posted. I've got Alan T. Butcher saying he's fed back. I've got Ian Kirk sending me his script. So thanks for doing it just in the nick of time. And now we can move on. And if anybody wants to comment, please do. Right, so Isle of Wight Comic Con is drawing ever closer. Exciting, exciting. Guests announced so far are got some people from Alien, Billy Mansell, Duke Hardy, Scott James and Steve Doyle. Got Nick Joseph, who is apparently behind somebody in Star Trek Episode 4. Brian Wheeler, who is a little person who was in Harry Potter and Return of the Jedi. a Game of Thrones actress called Josephine Gillen. I wonder if she's any relation to Karen, because she is redheaded. John Altman, who played Nasty Nick in EastEnders. Rosie Jane, who was Bill's mum in Doctor Who. Andrew Lee Potts, who was in Primeval with Hannah Spearitt. Scott Kyle from a program called Outlander. Anybody ever heard of that? I haven't.
Oh, yes.
Jeff Perrazzo, who was in Power Rangers Dino Thunder, wherever that is. Somebody called Kevin Duhaney, who was also in Power Rangers Dino Hunter, along with Steve Cardenas or something like that. He's been in a few Power Rangers things. Steve Byers, who was in Far Cry 5, Smallville, Immortals, Glacier, The Man in the High Castle. Ever heard of any of them? I've heard of Smallville. Isn't that a Superman thing? No. Okay, and Michelle Harrison, who was in Flash. James Duval, who was in Donnie Darko, Independence Day.
Ooh, Donnie Darko, yeah. That was a good one.
Paul McGann. Don't know who that is. Do you know who that is, Mary?
Oh, you know, Paul McGann had to pull out of the expo that we're having here in Dayton in October.
Oh, dear. Hope he doesn't pull out of this one. Brian O'Halloran, who's in Clerks, who Debbie got very excited about. And somebody called Pearl Mackey. Don't know if you have this Pearl Mackey woman. Apparently she was in Doctor Who. So those are the main guests who have been announced at the Isle of Wight Comic Con. Tickets running out. We are selling out. I say we. All right, they are selling out of tickets. But they are quite expensive. I will say that, you know, if you go to their shop to buy autograph opportunities, photo opportunities, some of the prices are very expensive. But, you know, you don't have to buy them. But I suppose some people might be disappointed if they, you know, if they don't, well, can't afford an opportunity to have their picture taken with Pearl Mackey, for instance. I have actually bought my opportunity with Paul McGann. I was thinking of getting a cardboard cutout of your face that I could stick on me to see if I get a kiss out of him. But we'll see how we get on with that one.
Yes, do that for me.
Well, kiss by proxy. That's the Isle of Wight Comic Con. Right, let's see if we can find some Isle of Wight Doctor Who news, not Isle of Wight news, sorry. We're getting on rather well here, with no quiz and no Kirby to hold things back. Doctor Who news. I should have a bit of news over the last couple of weeks. I'd be very surprised if there isn't. Twice Upon a Time synopsis we have. Is it going to be spoilerific if I read this out? What do you reckon? It's only a synopsis. I'm not telling the story, is it? BBC Worldwide has issued, by the way, I suppose I should say, if you really don't want to hear this synopsis, I'd skip forward about 30 seconds, but I'm going to read it anyway. BBC Worldwide has issued the press synopsis for the Doctor Who Christmas episode Twice Upon Time. The episode will be the last story to star Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, and we feature David Bradley in the role of the First Doctor. Pearl Mackey returns to Bill Potts alongside Lily Travers and Jared Garfield, who recreate the First Doctor's companions, Polly and Ben. Mark Gatiss also joins the cast as the Captain. That's not the synopsis. I do apologise, everybody. That is just who's in it. This is the synopsis. So, again, skip forward another 30 to 45 seconds, depending on how long it takes me to read this. I'd say a minute to be on the safe side. Two doctors stranded in a forbidden snowscape, refusing to face regeneration, and a British Army captain seemingly destined to die in the First World War, but taken from the trenches to play his part in the Doctor's story. This is the magical last chapter in the 12th Doctor's epic adventure. He must face his past to decide his future, and the Doctor will realise the resilience of humanity, discovering hope in his darkest frozen moment. It's the end of an era, but the Doctor's journey is also just beginning. There you go. Right. It doesn't really give anything away, does it, apart from a hint what we saw from the trailer anyway. So, but yeah, it's only 3 months to go, Mary, before that comes out.
Oh, sigh.
Telos, the Demons or Daemons of Devil's End. Telos Publishing has announced the release of an official tie on the novelization to the new Doctor Who spin-off drama, White Witch of Devil's End. Now, there's a picture here of the actress who played the witch, the White Witch, in that story. Obviously a bit older now, which is quite nice, really. I think she must be in her 90s, that actress. But yeah, nevertheless, she's on the cover of the book. Moving further down, we've got Who Talk release of two new classic commentaries of the Adventures in Time commentaries and the Claws of Atros commentary. Pearl Mackie back on the London stage. She's going to be in The Birthday Party, which is a play by Harold Pinter, with Toby Jones, who's also been in
Doctor Who. Toby Jones, yeah.
Stephen Mangan.
Whatever.
Yeah, Stephen Mangan, who don't think he's been in Doctor Who. So Wanamaker has. She played a stretchy face woman, Cassandra. And she also played Cassandra before she became stretchy-faced.
Stretchy-faced.
But better known for being Madame Hooch in Harry Potter. Talking of Harry Potter, better known for being Filch in Harry Potter is David Bradley, who plays the First Doctor. And it's David Bradley to play the First Doctor for Big Finish. That's an announcement and off, isn't it?
Recasting all the roles, so that's going to be interesting.
Yes. And also we've got pictures in the background of various actors who are going to be playing Barbara, Susan, Ian, and although it's quite upsetting for, you know, the original Barbara, Susan, Ian and Susan, who are still with us, you know, William and Carol Ann. But there you go. Big Finish have announced that David Bradley will be reprising the role of the First Doctor in a new series of audio plays. Bradley will star as the First Doctor in this year's BBC One Doctor Who Christmas special alongside Peter Capaldi, now Big Finish Productions, in arrangement with the BBC Worldwide, are giving this reimagined First Doctor another chance to explore the cosmos. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm very curious as to how that will turn out.
Yeah, I suppose it's quite nice that the BBC is helping Big Finish out in that way. Mm-hmm. Lost Dimension is a load of comics, which is talking about Comic Cons, is probably quite a good thing. Seventh Doctor had to be auctioned. Two treasures from the classic Doctor Who are amongst 600 lots of a movie memorabilia being sold in a London auction on the 26th of September. Are we there yet?
If any of this came from the experience?
It may well have done, which is quite sad, isn't it? Because that's gone. Mm-hmm. Sylvester McCoy's signature hat from his spell as the Seventh Doctor is up for sale alongside a Necros Dalek model miniature from Revelation of the Daleks, which starred Colin Baker. Thousands of pounds are being asked for these particular.
I wonder where the money's going. Mm.
And what upsets me, I think, if it is from the experience, it's stupid, because just because it's closed doesn't mean to say they can't open up Doctor Who museums, which they used to have. Before the experience was brought in, somewhere they could do a touring museum. Blackpool could reopen its world famous, now closed Doctor Who.
Well, are they closing it to like redo it?
Well, they could redo it sometime in the future.
Since it first opened.
I don't know what they're doing with it, but what gets me is that they're obviously not planning to do any more big BBC conventions like we've been to in the past. Otherwise, because they take this sort of thing along to that. They could do a big worldwide tour of things from the classic era. Mm-hmm. You know, it just baffles me why they would consider doing that. The most logical thing for me would be just lock it all up in storage, and when you need to bring it out to display it, do it, but not don't get rid of it. There you go. Christopher Eccleston is going to play Macbeth. I'm sure he's perfectly capable of doing that, even with a normal accent. Daphne Ashbrook, friend of the show. She's more of a friend of the show, isn't she? The next stage up from friend of the show. I can't remember what that is now.
relative.
The Phantom has announced the release of an audio version of Daphne Ashbrook's autobiography, read by the author. The actress who played Grace Holloway alongside the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann, first released her autobiography in 2012. So that'd be quite interesting if you like that sort of thing. I did enjoy, talk about audio autobiographies, I did enjoy Annika Wills' one, but she's done two, and I didn't get a chance to hear the second one. So, very, very interesting life she had, especially while she was in Doctor Who and beforehand. Class has been officially cancelled, but I think we spoke about that on the last episode. But
yeah,
surprise,
I think it was
surprise.
I don't know if it was official when we last talked.
Yes, so that essentially is that.
Oh, well, Class.
Yes. So let's see if anybody's posted anything. I don't think they have. Before I wind up the show, we're going to just quite a quick look through. Otherwise, I'll get into trouble with probably Kirby, because he's the one that get moans about me missing stuff. So I'm going to try my best not to miss any of it. The 20 megabyte. Oh, there it is. Right. Has anybody posted anything interesting on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join? Well, I've posted the interesting thing, of course, is the live stream of this show. Kirby's done that. Andy said he's listening to the latest podcast. So I'm just going outside and maybe sometime. Oh, dear. I don't think he's... I think Andy's criticising his own performance on the last show. I think he's been, to be fair, I think he's been fairly consistent on his appearances on the show. Maybe
he
needs to listen to a few of them, but they're not that bad. They're just, he's just naughty. Isn't he a naughty boy, Mary?
Oh, always.
I think it, basically,
always.
If you've got a family of people on any sort of thing, I'd rather it wasn't that way, but Andy is the naughty boy of the show. So we just need to give him a smack bottom, get him to behave himself. All right, then. Nabil Shaban, friend of the show, posts quite regularly on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. And he's posted about, it says, in a couple of weeks' time, my BBC TV documentary, The Alien Who Lived in the Sheds, will be celebrating its 20th anniversary of first and only broadcast on BBC Two on Wednesday, the 24th of September, 1997. For 1 month only, I have made it available to be watched on YouTube for free. Then it will return to being video on demand on Amazon. So there you go, you get a chance of watching that. He posted that, Nabil posted that on the 12th of September. And anybody who doesn't know who Nabil Shaban is, he played Cyril in the Colin Baker era.
He's done some Big Finish stories too.
Yeah. Anthony Butcher has posted a picture of his 20 megabyte T-shirt. I did post the logo. If you want to make up your own 20 megabyte T-shirts, which Alan indeed he's customised it, because it says Alan T. Butcher, these are my thoughts, as well as our logo.
However, it looks great. It like does. That T-shirt on him.
So contact me. You can buy it. It's £1, basically, to download the logo, and that pound obviously will go to the production of the show. It doesn't, not a great deal of money, but every little helps, you know. And that is on my business website, the APV website. So, but message me if you can't find it, and I'll send you the link. If you really, really want to get yourself sorted with a 20 megabyte t-shirt, you can get it sorted yourself by having the logo. Aren't I kind, Mary? No, obviously not, right?
Sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Oh, never mind. Oh, hang on. You didn't hear the question. That's I've got my bells under here somewhere. Here it is.
Could you repeat the question, please?
I can't. Aren't I kind was the question. Aren't I kind?
You are kind.
Thank
yes.
you very much. That's the correct answer.
And I faithfully wear my T-shirt whenever I go to cons.
So do I. And I faithfully left a couple behind at my last convention. Never mind, got told off for that as well from She Must Be Obeyed. That's Magic flapping his ears. If anybody wants to know what the funny noise was, he's acting very shifty this evening.
He's been pretty quiet for all of this time.
Yeah, he's just been pacing around the room in a very shifty fashion. Right then, so next time, I suppose I'm going to have to, I really don't want to wait 2 weeks, because we waited quite a long time between this one and the previous one.
We could get it done by next week.
I think we could get it done by next week, really. Should we do that then? Should we go for the Planet of the Daleks on the 24th of September?
Yes? Yeah, I'd like to.
Right, we're going to do it then. I've decided.
The committee has decided.
Yeah, nobody else can be bothered to turn up for the show, we'll do that. You have to go, Kirby says, I haven't watched it yet. Well, he has to.
I'm sure there will be a hue and cry.
Yeah, it'll be just me and you again if anybody can't be bothered
it
to.
Might be.
Bearing in mind, I haven't watched it yet, so I'm pretty confident, though, I can watch it between now and then. 6-part story.
If it's as good as this was, I had no problem watching these.
Well, don't get too excited. It is good. I don't think it's as good as Frontier, but you might have a different opinion. You seem to. But anyway, until then, I have to thank our faithful listenership and watchership. Is that a word? Watchership? For listening and watching the show and staying with us, especially where we've been off for a bit. And thank you, Mary, for coming along and joining me tonight and for the cup of tea.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, a shared cup of tea. We can clink cups.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to manage that. Let's try it.
No, that's might not break the screen.
Yeah, break the screen. Yeah. So until next time, hopefully next week. Bye.
Bye.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.